Blog Talk Radio.
On the latest episode of Conversations, we sit down with British filmmaker Amma Asante, a screenwriter, film director, and former actress who debuted with the 2004 film A Way of Life. She followed that film up with the period drama Belle in 2013, and her latest film, A United Kingdom, tells the story of the true life romance between Sir Suresh Karma and his wife Ruth Williams Karma. David Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike star as Suresh and Ruth, respectively. We'll talk to Asante about her latest film and a whole lot more on episode 58 of Conversations. All right, and welcome to the latest episode of Conversations. Of course, for those who are not familiar, Conversations is a show where I sit down one-on-one with film professionals, actors, directors, filmmakers, etc. And today I am happy to welcome back to the show a friend of the show and a person who I had an opportunity to spend some time with back in 2013 when Belle hit theaters, Amma Asante. Asante and I actually locally here in Washington, I traveled around with her for about 2 days, and we did about three kind of private screenings of her film where I actually interviewed her and did the Q&A. So we developed a rapport, and I was pleasantly surprised that when we sat down about a week and a half ago to talk about her latest film, that she remembered that as well. Amma Asante, and as you'll hear in the interview momentarily, we talk about, outside of her debut film, A Way of Life, her last two films have been films that sort of tackle race, but not from a perspective of race as it relates to stories, American stories about race or racial inequity, but of looking at it through the eyes of someone who lived in England or a British or somebody in the UK. And this latest story is just another example. It is a pretty interesting story that, as I compared it a little to Hidden Figures, or as the new term that I've used, when historical films come along that, like, a lot of us are not familiar with, and I was not familiar with this story as well. So before you listen to the conversation with Amma Asante, I'm going to play first the trailer of this film, and then we'll go directly into the conversation. So enjoy.
Father will hate him on sight. He's cleverer than him, and he's black.
She might change her mind.
I've met the man I want to spend my life with.
Are you insane? White, British, and she's a salesman's daughter.
My grandfather was a king. I am his heir. I have a responsibility to return home to my people. I will never achieve anything worthwhile if I leave my heart here.
I am the government's representative in Southern Africa.
The policy of apartheid. You know this word.
If you choose to marry the leader of an African nation, you will be responsible for the downfall of the British Empire in Africa. Have you no shame?
Over 2 decades of preparing you to be our king, and this is how you face me. How long before the village dust gets in her eyes?
I am told that you no longer wish for me to honor my duty as your king because of the color of the wife I have chosen.
Who do you think will accept you?
You belong to the whites, but they won't want you either.
I am ready to serve you because I love my people. I love this land. But I love my wife.
Now you will see how an empire defends itself, Mr. Karma. We have concluded that you should be exiled.
I belong with my people.
Prime Minister, the whole world is watching.
No man is free who is not master of himself.
She's stronger than either of us suspected.
It is time for us to create a new nation for us to be the masters of our own fate. It is time.
Did I ever tell you I didn't just marry you for your good looks?
Liar.
Let me just start by saying it is wonderful once again to sit down with a very talented filmmaker who I have watched your career and I've seen the sorts of films that you've taken on, and I'm proud because, you know, there's some people, I'm not going to name names, who have their types of films. I like the direction that you're going with your films. And I'm sitting here with the beautiful and lovely Amma Asante. This is your first film since Belle, when we had an opportunity to talk several years ago. So I'm going to jump right into it with this story because I knew nothing about this film going in. I didn't get a chance to see the screening. And I just wanted to see where the story was going to take me. So when I saw it was based on a true story, I said, okay, here we go. This film reminded me, and I'm going to throw out three titles, and you'll see where I'm going with this. It reminded me a little of what I call the Hidden Figures factor of introducing me to something that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
There was a little of Coming to America meets Loving in this film.
Wow.
So
you didn't say Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. That's what I thought you were going to say, but okay.
No. But there is that aspect in it
coming
as well.
Coming to America meets Loving. Okay.
So I'm thinking about him as an African prince in London.
Gotcha.
So here's the story. That I'm a student of history, and I knew nothing about this in the African continent. So talk about how you discovered this story, or if this was something that you always knew about, and why did you choose this to be your follow-up film?
Well, just to set the backdrop, I'm a child of West African parents, Ghana. I'm raised in the United Kingdom. My parents came over to the UK in the late 50s, early 60s. Ghana was the first sub-Saharan country to gain independence in Africa, a sub-Saharan African country.
Right.
My father was raised, therefore, in a colony and stood in the Independence Square and waved the flag as the Gold Coast became Ghana in 1957. So against that backdrop, I'm raised, and I'm raised reciting the speeches of Kwame Nkrumah. I'm raised under a father, you know, through a father who was a Pan-Africanist and believed in the United States of Africa and believed that, you know, that the colonialist method was to divide and rule, and that the only way forward was united we stand. And you feel that in the movie, I hope. You feel that in the United Kingdom. And so I wasn't arrogant enough to think that I knew every story of independence in Africa, but I thought I knew all of the significant ones that had made big fat international waves, and therefore that this one would fall into that category, and it didn't. I didn't know anything about it at all. I had never heard of Seretse Khama. I had never heard of Ruth Williams. And I'm at home one evening in the UK, actually in Holland, where I lived at the time. I did live in there for 8 years, and my phone doesn't stop ringing, and I'm thinking, oh, let me have a night off, please, somebody, and eventually I answer the phone, and it's David Oyelowo. And David is calling because from Zimbabwe, I think it was Zimbabwe, or maybe it was somewhere in Africa. Anyway, he's calling because he has come across the book Color Bar by Susan Williams several years ago, which is the book that our film is based on, and he had fallen in love with the story about this gentleman, this king called Seretse Khama and Ruth Williams. He too didn't know anything about them until he accidentally came across this book. And he, along with some producers, purchased the rights to the book, and there was a script that existed at the time, and they felt it was time to move the project forward, bring a director on board, and bring this thing to fruition. David had just finished Selma. I had just not long finished promoting Belle, and Rosamund Pike, who was not on board at that time, had just finished Gone Girl. And so as three Brits who had sort of made some kind of impact in America, it seemed like a good thing to do, to come together and see if we could use a little bit of our influence to get this story made. And that's how it came to me, really. As with everything, it was about then stopping and going, hey, wait, let me go back and do my research, because there is a script that exists right now, but I need to know what is true, what isn't true, and what is really important for me apart from the love story, because we should always see everything through the prism of the love story, as the child of Kwame Asante, was that the African politics should come through, that Soretse should have an inner and outer story arc, and that inner and outer story arc, yes, should encompass the love story, but should be some kind of thought process that he must have gone through when he decided that he wanted to go the way of democracy in his country and move his country towards independence.
Right.
So that was important. And that the African politics came through, but that also the British politics should come through so that we understood the might of the love. Without understanding what the love was up against, which was South Africans putting pressure on the British. You won't have uranium. You won't have gold. You know, we will withhold all of these very important things that are so relevant to you in the post-war country, pulling itself up by the bootstraps. Without us understanding how hefty that pressure was and the position that Britain was put in, we could not understand the power that the love stood up to, and therefore we could not understand the power of the love. So all of those things were important, and it was the research that was required and Susan Williams' book to ensure that balance then therefore then came through in the film.
You said a mouthful, and there's a lot to kind of parse through there.
Yeah.
So the fact, and I'll talk about the timeliness of the story. I just said earlier that Loving came out, which in the United States is a significant landmark because 1967, integrated marriage. Your story paints a backdrop of kind of the beginning of apartheid in Africa, and this love that you're talking about, which you can't really speak because you can't get inside the head of this couple to find out, you know, what drove them to do this. But you're talking about countless centuries of tradition. You're talking about culture.
And I make sure they say that in the film.
Right.
You know, it's very important. When I came on board, you know, it was important for the uncle to say, but you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years of, you know, dismantling hundreds of years of tradition in Africa. And it's important, you know, what the film does is bring a tangible reality to that saying, once we were kings, and that we had a functioning Africa before colonialists came on board. You know, the myth is that Africa wasn't functioning. It was functioning. Trust me, I'm the child of Africa, so I know it was. And so it's important to know that those cultural traditions were as important to those people as, you know, Brexit is to me.
Right.
As a person raised in Britain.
Right.
You know?
So I understand how this film will probably play in Britain, or at least have an idea that it may be looked at now as a story that kind of shows the changing of the guard politically in Britain from about 60 or 70 years ago. But as that story transcends, or as you kind of bring that story across the sea to here and understanding the political state, especially where we are as a country right now.
And of course, not knowing that this is where
right.
we are as a country right now at the time that we made it.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean,
so
how did as you've been promoting this, what is the general tone of journalists as they think about how this film will play for American audiences who are now looking at this story, because we just had our own sort of kind of interracial story that talked about the importance of interracial marriage in this country, and we know love is love, but this is love is love under the backdrop of African tradition. The British squeezing them. I was sitting there the whole full movie going, you sons of... Because they were just not... The way that whole thing was handled, I just thought was... Ugh.
Well, I think that I in some ways, am starting to realize that I have a somewhat, not completely, but a somewhat unusual way of seeing the world at times, I think. And I do think it comes from... I do think it's a perspective, again, that first generation children of immigrants see the world, which is that there are no islands. Islands don't exist. So America is not an island when it comes to the political influences that are running across the world, through the world. So oftentimes what happens is, you know, in Britain, we say, oh, America sees us and we catch a cold. It's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street. You know, America is also a sponge as well as being, a projector and sending influences out through the world. It also receives influences. So when I told the story of Belle, for me, what I understood as an example was that in terms of how it would play in Africa, it would give, sorry, in America, it would give American audiences an understanding of how that slavery triangle worked. So understanding that, you know, these ships oftentimes started off in Britain, you know, traveled to Africa, unloaded whatever goods they had bought from Britain in Africa, exchanged them for African slaves, and then took those slaves to the Caribbean or America, exchanged the slaves for money and cotton or whatever other goods they could pick up in America, and then came back to the UK and dumped what they picked up in America, and the whole thing started again. And so understanding that there was... slavery within America fitted within a context, and Britain was involved in that context. Now, when I now tell the story of the Retse Karma, what I'm doing is putting certain aspects of America in a context, and simply using that saying, "Once we were kings," it's part of that context. It's to understand. It's not just a saying. It was real, and so. When you walk with a dignity, an expectation, an understanding that you came from, that slaves were brought to America from a place that had traditions, a cultural world, a cultural narrative that worked, that had dignity,
right.
that's what slaves were torn away from. And although we're seeing it in 1947, to be able to see what that looked like in 1947, when at the time, you know, I say it, you know, the movie said, as Attlee is speaking, you know, America is telling us what to do, but let's not forget, America is sitting there within the context of its Jim Crow laws.
Right.
What I'm always constantly trying to do with my stories, whether they take place in Europe or whether they take place in Africa, is put them in a world context. You know, there was a Cold War evolving at the time. Uranium was necessary because there was an atomic bomb program that existed within the UK, and uranium was needed in the UK cheaply in order for that atomic bomb program to exist. The fact that Britain needed gold, it needed gold because that underlined the pound, and Britain was poor, broke after the war. So what was happening in South Africa connected to what was happening in the UK. What was happening in the UK was, there was a back and forth connection to what was happening in the US. And I never want to see any one of, well, I just will simply say the word diaspora. There is a reason why we're called the diaspora, the African diaspora. We are connected. And these stories are not just my history. They're not just the history of the people of Botswana. They're not just the history of the people of the UK, you know. They are a history that connects in some way to all of our context and explain how we sometimes came to arrive in the positions that we see ourselves in, and give us the information we need to make choices about who we need to be as we go forward.
So what? The whole time you're talking, I'm thinking that I've looked at your last two films, and for me, what you've come to represent as a director is the person who will tell stories about the continent or tell stories from a British perspective to kind of educate us on the history and disseminate those stories and give them to us here in America. Right, so I was going to say, is that a role that you hope to continue to kind of seek out these sorts of stories?
I don't do it on purpose.
Okay.
It's not something I plan. But I look at, you know, somebody asked me in a separate interview today, you know, what advice would I give to aspiring female directors? I said, find projects that you love. Because they take so long to get off the ground that you will lose interest or focus. And that, you know, you need to love that project like you love a child, so that when the going gets tough and every door is closed in your face, and with the word no, you keep up that tenacity and that persistence that it actually takes to get a movie off the ground, because in actual fact, whatever color you are, or gender you are, it takes on average at least 7 years to get a British independent movie off the ground.
Wow.
So the tenacity is required, and for that tenacity, I believe there has to be love. So I go for themes and stories that I need in my world, and I believe that if I need them in my world, there must be a need in other people's worlds to gain a bigger understanding of who they are and what their bigger identity and their bigger context is in this world that we live in today. Because I do think, and I've done a TED talk on it, I do think that we live in a world that easily reduces us, and that if we're not informed, if we're not educated as to who we truly are, then our sense of identity is informed by somebody else's idea of us. And I don't accept that. I don't accept that as an individual, and therefore I don't accept it in my films. And therefore, those are the stories that I want to make movies that everybody wants to go and see. But make no mistake, in every single movie I make, there is a layer in there that I know people of color around the world in the diaspora will absorb on a different level. And that matters to me. It matters to me that is always in there. So, you know, a lot of people said, oh, Anna's making a movie about an interracial couple. You know, her movies always have this interracial, element involved in them. My movies, in fact, have been about people of color in Europe, and that often leads to a sense of isolation. So oftentimes, you know, that there are white people involved in those stories. But what I'm always trying to do is investigate how you achieve an authentic sense of identity when there is no network of people who are like you reflected back at you. How do you hold on to your identity, or find your identity, or hold on to the principles that matter to you when there is nobody else out there, no other network around there to reflect it back at you? And in Sirette's case, isolated in the UK, you have to fight to get back to the people who matter to you. How do you do that? And so within that context, you have an isolated person of color who is struggling to achieve that challenge, achieve that the goal of that challenge. And you know, in Europe, that often means there's an interracial element in there, but by no means always. By no means always.
All right, so I have a two-part question for you. One, I want to talk about David Oyelowo, who has found success working with you, has found success working with Ava. To me, I mean, I'm not mad at him. If I had an opportunity to work and could look at you every day and get direction, look at Ava DuVernay and get direction, I'd be good with that. What do you think about David's sensibility as an actor? Is he more receptive, or is it from a nurturing standpoint as an actor? Do you feel that he's more comfortable working with female directors or directors of the opposite sex?
Well, David was partly raised in Africa as well as the UK. And if you're asking me, it's very hard to kind of analyze, you know, what makes a person tick and what drives a person.
Right.
But what I will say is this. When you're raised in Africa, you do understand the power of women. I mean, African women hold up the sky. And despite the challenges that may exist for us and may exist for us around the world as well, despite the challenges, if you're raised by an African mother, you make no mistake as to her sense of intellect, her sense of tenacity, her strength, and her ability to move your world forward as a child, and or as her child. And I think for David, it's simply a no-brainer. I mean, he said it himself. There's no issue with working with black females, because he knows what a competent black female can do.
Right.
His mother was one. It's just not difficult. And I think, you know, again, in a previous interview, somebody asked me, what do we need to move forward to get more people of color behind the camera, and also to get more women behind the camera? And I said, just simple honesty. No morality involved, but just a simple honesty that it makes no sense to strangle voices, talented voices, from one section of community in any industry because all you do is hurt that industry.
Right.
It makes no sense. And if you're simply honest about that, then there's no morality involved. It's just a business decision. It makes no sense. Hidden Figures is not an accident. The box office that it's making is not an accident. And therefore, and David gets that. And in fact, David works with just as many men as he works with women. It's just that that's what makes him different.
Right.
He works with just as many men as he works with women, as opposed to it's predominantly men. And in that, all he's doing is living out a true, an authentic truth that there is and should be equality.
And the second part of that question is, there's been, over the last 5 years, there's been an influx of Brits, and actually, past the last 5 years, maybe the last decade,
Yay.
There's been an influx of high-profile British actors who have done quite well here. What would you attribute that to?
That we need to come here to get opportunity. that we struggled for a long time, in our home country for recognition. And sometimes have to leave the home base to be appreciated. And, you know, America is an English-speaking country like Britain, so it's an obvious, with a big television and movie-making industry, so it's the obvious place to come to and try one's luck to see. I think we are, we have a wealth of talent in the UK, a wealth of black talent in the UK. As well as talent from many diverse backgrounds. But it's been a struggle for that recognition. And sometimes what you have to do is leave, make your name somewhere else before you can go back and be appreciated for what you have to offer.
As always, I mean, our time is done, but it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And much success. Can't wait until the next time you come back.
Hopefully coming back soon. I just finished my next movie with Amanda Stenberg. We're in post-production now.
You need to call me or something. Let me know what's going on. You know, you need your fans to know.
I do. I do. Thank you so much.
Oh, I got it.